Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, our next guest stormed onto the literary scene in 2008 with the publication of his debut novel, Bad Day in Black Rock. Kevin Power's critically acclaimed book went on to become a movie called What Richard Did, directed by Lenny Abramson. You might remember, you might know that name, and it starred Jack Rayner. Last year, he had another hit with his second novel, White City, highly recommended from here. But Kevin is here today to talk about his new book. It's called The Written World. It's a collection of Kevin's essays and book reviews from over the years. Good afternoon, Kevin. Great to meet you.
Great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. And congratulations on White City. I know it's out a year now, but that was the difficult second novel.
The very difficult second.
So
novel,
how many years was there between the first and the second?
13, I think.
All right.
I try not to count them, but yeah, 13, I think.
What were you doing?
Well, you know, sitting back, drinking cocktails and, you know, enjoying the freelance lifestyle. No, it wasn't like that at all.
It was initially, I'd imagine.
I mean, you know, people think writers make a lot of money, and some writers do, but most of us definitely don't make that much money, not enough to kind of sit back drinking cocktails and, you know, enjoying the sunset. Far from it.
What age were you when Bad Day was released?
I was 27.
Right.
And I'm 40 now. And at 27, you think you know everything. You think you've solved most of the problems that life's going to throw at you. And of course, you're wrong. One of the worst things that can probably happen to you, or that certainly could have happened to me at 27, was to have some success, to achieve the thing I most wanted to achieve.
Why?
In life. Because if you want to be a writer, you know, there are good and bad reasons to want to be a writer, and you can have both good and bad reasons. The good reason is that, you know, you like it, you're good at it, and you like telling stories, and you like making things that other people will enjoy and get something out of. But the bad reason is that you are attracted to the glamour, you're attracted to the prestige, and you're using it as a kind of defense against the, you know, how hard life can be. You think, well, something awful happens to me, that's okay, I'll just write about it, and I'll be
right,
able to put that experience in a little box and, you know, keep it away from, you know, hurting me, stop it from really hurting me. And that's I think that's the wrong way to go about being a writer or any kind of artist at all.
But writing is an amazing craft. And like, I'm in awe of anybody who can write a book. And I know you say in this, and there's two things that I took away from this. Well, there's loads of things, but two of them are that most books are bad. And that most people don't read. Now, the first one's an opinion, but is the second one a fact? Do most people not read?
I don't have recent figures on this, but I think it varies greatly by country, and it varies greatly by socioeconomic status and all these kind of things. I think most people don't read literary fiction on a regular basis, and I read nothing, almost nothing but, and that's kind of what I meant by that. I think it was actually quoting Zadie Smith, though, who said that, so that's not me saying that directly.
And most books are bad.
Most anything is bad, you know, most of everything is bad. And this is why people hate critics, because when everybody loves something, the critic is the person who goes, well, hang on a minute, is this actually good? And if so, why? And if not, why not? And to me, that is why we need critics.
Because this, The Written World, is a collection of your reviews of books and other things. It talks initially about those years between the first and the second novel. Here's a point you make, and this will be interesting for people, it's interesting for me anyway, is that sort of exclusively among the human endeavour, writers criticise other writers, and you say, for example, and I'll change the second singer here, but Billie Eilish wouldn't write a critique of Taylor Swift's latest album, but novelists write critiques of other novels and novelists.
This is it, and film directors don't make a film, you know, to review, you know, the new Martin Scorsese, or, you know,
yes.
Opera singers.
So
don't,
what does that tell you about writers?
Well, it tells you that we all write all the time. Everyone's some kind of writer. We write emails, or we post on social media. We text each other. You know, language is, it's the medium we talk to each other through. So if you're a kind of you become a writer, someone who uses language professionally, you know, and are sort of designated, you know, that this is the
That's
thing.
Your job. Yeah.
It's your job. You're kind of in an interesting position, because we all move through all kinds of different ways of using language throughout the day. You talk very differently to your spouse when you wake up in the morning than you do to your colleagues in work and all that kind of thing. But once you start professionally using language, you have to become you have to write what you're asked to write, and you have to negotiate different kinds of writing all the time. So you have to be aware, well, what am I writing? I'm writing a novel. That's one way of doing it. I'm writing a book review. There are certain ways that you'd go about it, or I'm writing a film review or anything like that. And, you know, it gets you in trouble because you can use the wrong language, or you can hurt people's feelings.
But is that not the nature of criticizing? Like, you know,
I mean, this is it. I there are definitely
like there's no victimless book review to sort of
unless it's a rave and it tells this is the greatest book ever written.
How many book reviews have you written?
I counted this recently, and it came up to something like 360 over the years. And I've definitely, there are people who don't want to see me and won't talk to me because I've given them a bad review. That's definitely true. But I have kind of two responses to that, which is one, what use is a critic who doesn't say what they think? You know, that's what we need them for and what we pay them for. But the other thing is that if you are going to put a work of art of any kind out there, some people are going to hate it. They're just going to say, this is not for me. And you have to be a bit thick-skinned. I think it's really, really important to either have or develop a thick skin. I mean, anyone who's in any kind of public, you know, makes any kind of presence in the public eye has to have some kind of thick skin.
You see, as I've got older, I'm going to say it out loud for the first time. I've sort of grown to feel sorry for people who criticise for a living.
And there's that old saying, those who can't criticize or teach.
But at least you've done it. So you've written books.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And I like writers who also do criticize because they have a unique, you know, way of looking at it, because they know how what it takes to write a novel and how novels work. This is why I wish directors would write reviews, because they know how films work and they would have insights that, you know, somebody doesn't make films.
So, bad reviews. Have you got bad reviews yourself?
Yes, I have. Yeah.
And what did you do with those? Ceremoniously burn them in the back garden? Or?
I used to read them and I'd let them haunt me for a while. But I now, first of all, I try not to read them. So I'll ask my wife to kind of scan a review if I think it's going to be bad and let me know if I should read it.
Yeah, but isn't the Buddha's thing that you disregard the good ones and the bad ones?
Yeah, this is the thing. The problem is, if you get a good review, you kind of think, well, yeah, of course, I'm great. But if you get a bad review, you think, oh no, everything in this is true, and I'm worthless, and my book is worthless, and all this kind of thing. Yeah. But eventually you learn not to take either of them that seriously. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, which ones do you hold on to longer? I know the answer to this question
already.
Oh,
it's the bad ones. Yes, of course you hold on to them. Yeah.
Verbatim, you probably have them verbatim.
You can't ever remember a nice thing somebody says about your book.
So with all that then, when you come to write a review on somebody else's work, knowing that and how it affects you, do you not empathise, you know, walk a couple of paragraphs in their shoes, so to speak?
I used to be very hard-headed about this, and I'd say, no, it's a bad book. I'm just going to say it's a bad book. But now I'm older, you know, and as you say, you change as you get older. Yeah. And now I know what it takes to write, you know, a novel, and how hard it can be and how difficult. So I think I am. I hope I've mellowed a bit and become slightly more empathetic in that way.
Right.
As I go on writing.
I read an article you wrote recently, and it was sort of you... wondering if you had some sort of addiction maybe to reading. You read 130 books a year.
Something like that, yeah. I used to count them. I stopped counting them a few years ago.
Right. I've done the maths on this. So that's what, 2 1/3 books a week.
Yeah, I think that's about right.
Is that about right?
That is about right, yeah. And it is, it's a neurosis. You know, I can justify it all I want. I can say, you know, it makes me seem clever or whatever. But I think it's like...
But reading books doesn't make anybody clever, does it?
No, this is the thing. No. You know, it gives you the illusion that you are if you want it. But yeah, that's the thing. It's like, I might as well be smoking, you know, or gambling. Or, you know, it's something.
Well, it's a clean enough addiction.
Sure,
fairness.
Well, that's it. Harms no one but me.
So you have a to read pile, do you?
Several, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. We're moving house shortly, and I had to pack up all of my books in boxes. I came to 30 boxes. And I didn't want to know that number. I didn't want to know how many books I had, but I was kind of forced to confront it. And you kind of go, this is a kind of a compulsion, you know, buying and reading books. But it's, as I said in that piece was in the Irish Times, it's a way of, again, having a kind of sense of order and control over the world. It gives you something that is, you know, yours and controllable and makes sense, and it can make you feel better if you're stressed.
it's overwhelming, I find. Books, I find books, as in the number of books in the world, even in a bookshop, even on my shelves at home, it's slightly overwhelming. Because you couldn't possibly ever read them all. And that sort of makes you realise how little, you know, you can find out, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I'll never read all the books I own. You know, if I live to be 200, I just will never get to them all. But in a way,
what a waste of money.
That's it. Yeah, it's true. I should be, you know, gambling away or something. Yeah, but that's not the point in a way. The point is that it's a hobby. You know? It's a hobby in the same way that people
reviews have to be entertaining, and you say that they have to sort of continue the conversation that started in the book. That's the measure of a good review. You review Sally Rooney's latest book. What's the name of it? Beautiful World.
Beautiful World, Where Are You?
Yeah. And you're critical but complimentary.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. Yeah. I mean, I think she's an extremely good writer. Of course she is. And that book is a really interesting book. I don't think it works in all of its, you know, in all the things it tries to do, but it's, you know, it's really fun to read and there's loads of interesting stuff in it.
Are you bemused sometimes when you see some books get rave reviews and selling loads of units?
Sometimes, yeah. But aren't we all? You know,
that's taste, isn't it?
That's taste, yeah. And I mean, you know, in the final analysis, you cannot ever, you know, say one person's taste is better than anyone else's. You can only say that one person's taste might be more informed. They might simply have thought about this more or read more, seen more films. Like, you know, for Donald Clark's taste in films is better than mine because he's seen way more films than I haven't thought about it more, I would say.
That's interesting. But he can't tell you or I what we would like.
But that's it. But that's exactly it. So yeah. I go to him for an informed and, you know, often very funny, you know, take on a film. But in the end, of course, I'll make up my own mind. Yeah. The critics are not there to make up your mind for you. They're there to help you think.
And of course, you know, book, it's a business. It's a book business. And you're part of it if you write review. That you can either encourage people to or discourage them to buy a book.
Absolutely, yeah. But at the end of the day, I often wonder how much that really works, because I've often read a bad review of a book and said, that sounds right up my street, and I've gone out and bought it and I've loved it. So, you know, in a way, you know, someone asked me recently, you know, are you ever worried you'll affect the sales of a book? And I said, well, I actually don't know if reviewers have that power.
Do they not?
I don't think they do, no. Writers are much more likely to damage their sales or reputation by saying something daft on Twitter, for example, than they are from getting a bad review.
Does the bigger the writer and the further the way further away they are from you, both sort of geographically and in other ways, does that frees you up to be a lot more honest?
It does, yeah. It absolutely does.
I'm just James Patterson and Bill Clinton.
They're not going to get annoyed if I take a shot at them in the newspaper.
I doubt they've read it.
They're not going to notice. Exactly. Oh, yeah. I don't think Bill Clinton is at home reading all of his book reviews. At least I hope not.
Yeah, whereas Sally Rooney might have read your review.
She might. Yeah. But again, I have enormous respect for her work, and I enjoy reading it hugely. And I would,
Now, and this, you write in the book a good few pages on Ross O'Carroll Kelly.
Yes.
Different class.
Yes.
So it's like an academic analysis of where he sits in Irish culture.
Yeah.
Why?
Because no one had done it before. Because he is a really important writer, Paul Howard, who writes those books. Those are really important books. And I think, it's, you know, there are a couple of excellent sort of academic, very academic scholarly articles about him. But I wanted to do something, you know, for a general audience about why those books are important and what they mean, because it hadn't been done before. Because he's often dismissed as, you know, they're popular fiction. They sell really well. People like them. So he's often not taken seriously by intellectuals, if you will. And I wanted to do something that, you know, that took him seriously without being kind of pretentious about it.
It's very interesting. And I'd buy the book just to read that, because it tells us an awful lot about ourselves. Just on that, is there a sort of an elitism in books, sort of a intellectual snobbery?
Oh yeah, of course there is. I mean, I'd be guilty of it myself. There's no point pretending otherwise. Over the years, I definitely have. But yeah, I think there's reviews in this book of, you know, thrillers and science fiction and all you know, genre fantasy novels, all the kind of stuff. I'm not snobbish about that. I never have been. I think a good book is a good book, and literary fiction, most of it is rubbish. But you know, most genre fiction is rubbish too.
I can't remember the exact review, but you sort of rip it apart. And at the end you go, but I loved it.
Yeah. I think that's Bill Clinton. Is it? James Patterson, actually, yeah. Yeah, it's rubbish, but it's really entertaining. You know, and that's a valid, you know, reason to read a book. You know, you can read a book and say, well, yeah, come on, it's not well written, or the characters are cardboard or whatever, but it can still be entertaining. And it's important, I think, for a critic to say that and to know that.
There's a very enlightened essay on Greta Thunberg, and you've read her mother's memoir. Mm. And you put Greta in the context of not just the world and climate change, but her family and how she was reared and all that sort of thing. And that's really enlightening. There's a text in here from, I think, your teacher. What is critics Kevin's favourite book of all time? Somebody asks.
I think I'd go with The Great Gatsby by F. Scott Fitzgerald.
Right. Critics are like eunuchs in a harem. They know how it's done. They've seen it done every day, but they're unable to do it themselves. But that's not it. You see, that's the thing about people.
Well, I
who
am
write
both eunuch
reviews.
And practitioner.
Yes,
so.
Yes. What's that?
So to speak.
I don't know how you describe this woman, Brené Brown. You know her. She's an American sort of. She writes books and she's a motivational speaker and all that sort of thing. Mm. But she has this thing about if you're not in the stadium, I don't really care what you have to say.
Well, I'm very interested in what all kinds of people have to say. Why do we have sports commentators? Why do we have sports journalists? I mean, you know, because we like to help. We like people to think about this stuff for us and to help us think about stuff. I mean, there's almost nothing in life that's not worth thinking about. That is what writing is for. It's what criticism is for. If you don't want to think about something, that's fine. Then go and do something else and don't read criticism. But sure.
Now, this is it. Marie Pierce, I taught Kevin for Leaving Cert and knew even then that he would be a writer. He was modest and self-effacing with a great passion for the subject. I'd just like to say that great students bring out the best in their teachers, not always the other way around. Best luck, Kevin, and I look forward to reading your latest inkings.
That's amazing. Well, thank you, Mary. That's so lovely to hear.
Your latest inkings, will there be another novel?
Oh, not for ages, Ray. I have two small kids that are taking up quite a lot of my time, and I mean I have a day job, you know. I'll be putting together another book of essays, I hope, over the next couple of years. Right. And there is a novel, but it's in very early stages.
And aspiring writers, this is a good read for them, The Written World, because it describes you attempting a number of novels in those intervening 13 years, and getting them back from your agent and knowing that they weren't good.
Yeah. It happens. I think a novel's very hard to write. Sometimes you have to write kind of three or four before five before you start to get it right. You know, novels are very hard. Someone like Sally Rooney, who seems to be very good at it from the start, is so unusual. And that's why she's remarkable, and why people in the book world are sort of amazed by her.
It sort of comes naturally to her, but it's hard work involved. Have you ever ghostwritten anything? Have you ever been asked to ghostwrite anything?
No, no one's ever asked me. Right. I would do it for an enormous amount of money.
Oh, would you? Right, okay.
If anyone is interested.
I'll talk to you off air. Right. Kevin Power, The Written World, is in bookshops now. Kevin, great to meet you and lovely to talk to you. Quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.